outside the quiet room, I could see him right through the window firing into the congregation.
Then we heard the next gunshot go off, and then I'm stunned, and I'm looking around, and I see this man standing there with gray hair and this shotgun.
He's, like I said, he's always been a quiet neighbor and mind his own business and never give nobody no trouble in the neighborhood, you know.
Some people describing what happened, tragically happened at a church in the South, a church just going about its business, albeit a church that is known in the community for being very liberal. That church and its members, at least two of its members, victims of a terrible shooting. We're going to be talking about not only that shooting, tragedy that it is, but also the issue of guns in church. This man, of course, carried a shotgun into church and wielded it toward terrible ends. But, well, we've talked about this before on Issues, Etc. In a gun-toting society, some people think that churches is an appropriate place for them to carry their gun legally, than any place else. I've even had conversations with listeners who've told me that they wouldn't necessarily have a problem with someone carrying the gun illegally into church. We're going to be talking about that. It's audio open lines here in the first, about the first hour of Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, and thanks for tuning us in. You can join us. Our call-in number on this Tuesday, the 29th of July, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, or talkback at issuesetc.org, talkback at issuesetc.org. A little bit later during audio open lines, we'll have a Fox News segment on a court case involving saying the Pledge of Allegiance in public schools. Now, I grew up with it. My kids grew up with it. Seems as though most people are familiar with the practice, at least, of beginning of the day, the kids turn toward the flag, and as they turn towards the flag, they're able to say the Pledge of Allegiance. I don't think it's mandatory, but I think it's a practice common to parochial and public schools. We'll hear that story. My question for you is, what about church? I've been to church services on a Sunday morning, usually around the 4th of July or after 9/11, where the Pledge of Allegiance was said there in church. Is that appropriate, given that the God we're talking about in the Pledge of Allegiance, one nation under God, doesn't bear a lot of resemblance to the God of Holy Scripture? And a little later during Audio Open Lines, a CNN interview with Pastor Rick Warren on religion and politics. He, of course, is going to be hosting Barack Obama and John McCain at his place out there in California, Saddleback Church in California, for a leadership conference. We'll hear about that and why. Dr. Peter Scarer will join us a little bit later in the program, hour two. We'll start off that hour talking with him about Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, two sisters and a brother in Holy Scripture. And then, in the last part of Issues, Etc. today, Dr. Ken Cherb will join us. We'll go through prayer. It's a simple word. Everyone thinks that they know how to do it. Most Christians feel guilty about not doing it enough. What is prayer? And how do we fundamentally misunderstand prayer so often, even as Christians? That's the second hour of Issues, Etc. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback at issuesetc.org. Well, here's the story from CNN on a Unitarian Universalist church in Tennessee, where a man, tragically, carried in his gun and shed blood.
Police say Jim Adkison, 58 years old, walked into the packed church with a shotgun and opened fire.
We have a lot of really just scared, traumatized children.
Many of those children were in the midst of performing a play when witnesses say Adkison pulled the gun from a guitar case and began shooting. Greg McKendry, one of two people killed, is being called a hero for putting himself directly in the shooter's path to save others.
We'll tell you that Greg McKendry, we love. Loved Greg McKendry. And please pray for this congregation because we are grieving the loss of a wonderful man.
There is speculation this may have been a hate crime since the church has been open to gays and lesbians as advertised on its website and by a sign outside the church.
Everyone here knows who I am. They know who the woman I've been in a relationship with 15 years is. They appreciate that relationship.
Adkisson's neighbors say they are stunned by this news. They described him as a nice guy.
Okay, let's lay aside for a moment the other hot-button issues here. That being that this church was a Unitarian Universalist church that was kind of notorious in the community for being very liberal. Let's lay that one aside. We can deal with that at a different time. Of course, let's say from the outset that this is no way to deal with theological problems. No compulsion, no bloodshed, no force of any kind is necessary. St. Paul reminds us we do not struggle against flesh and blood, but against the powers and principalities of darkness. And that is not done wielding the weapons of war or a shotgun. So this is no way to combat liberalism in the church, what this man's solution apparently was. But let's ask a related question. And I do not mean to make light of this. I think it's a serious question. We have places of business where in some states it's illegal to carry even a legally concealed firearm into that place of business. Restaurants, post offices, you name it. What about the church? Should the church on Sunday morning be a no-gun zone? I'm not talking about gun control. I'm not talking about Second Amendment rights. I'm talking about the church on Sunday morning. I mean, some might argue that this could have been prevented had someone in that church seen him coming and been able to arm themselves against him. What do you think? 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-MYIE. Or email us right here in the studio. We're talking about on the heels of these shootings in this Universalist Unitarian Church in Tennessee, the question of guns in church. A little bit later, the Pledge of Allegiance in church? That seems more peaceful. 1-877-623-MYIE or talkback at issuesetc.org.
Now, unlike you, you're like part of the National Rifle Association, right?
Used to be, yeah.
Used to be, okay. So I'm for the Second Amendment, but I'm not as big a Second Amendment guy as Wilkin. Would you agree with me?
Yeah, but I'm not the biggest Second Amendment guy. True. I'll explain that in a few minutes, but go ahead.
Okay, so I'm not the biggest Second Amendment guy, but I was at a wedding recently in which I was glad I knew that there was a federal law enforcement official because I feared that if the ex-spouse showed up, I mean, I was planning my escape plan from the church.
You always do this. You always think the worst is going to happen. Okay, so there was someone there toting a gun.
Craig just said, was it a shotgun wedding? That's pretty good.
Pretty good, Craig. So you were glad to have an officer of the law fully armed?
Believe me, I thought about it. I thought about it at this recent wedding. And I was sitting close to him.
What kind of friends do you hang out with?
I don't know, but I'm just saying this issue hit me at home, and I'm not a big, you know, Second Amendment, rights guy.
All right, just so we can get it out of the way and not distract people from the issue, when it comes to the Second Amendment, I've always said everybody believes in gun control. Everybody does. Do you believe that felons should have access to firearms? If you answer no, then you believe in gun control. So no one's talking about unfettered use of guns. The question here is, if this could have been prevented, this tragedy in Tennessee could have been prevented by someone, say like Jeff's law enforcement friend there, quick on the draw, could have saved lives, would you object to someone carrying a gun in church? Legally, of course. 1-877-623-MYIE or talkback at issuesetc.org. Talkback at issuesetc.org. I mean, there was a day in our country's history where people may have well carried weapons into church just as a normal course of events because people carried weapons with them. It may not have been firearms or handguns, but it could have been something else. It was far more part of our everyday life. I've known former parishioners who the gun may not be in church, but it's certainly under the front seat of the car out in the parking lot. That's about as far as they'd want to get away from their trusty six-shooter or a handgun or something else. What about you? 1-877-623-MYIE. Should church be a no-gun zone? Talkback at issuesetc.org. Talkback at issuesetc.org. I think some churches do the, what do they call them, turkey shoots? Meat shoots? Never figured out what that was. Do you know how that works, Craig? A meat shoot? They don't shoot meat, they shoot for meat, right? Okay, so it's essentially whoever is the best shot gets the meat, the turkey, or whatever else they're giving away. I've seen churches host this. So there are guns on the premises. Do you think it's wise if you had the legal ability to carry a gun? Do you think it's wise to carry it into church? 1-877-623-MYIE. Talk back at issuesetc.org. When we come back from this break, it's audio open lines here during the first hour. We'll hear a Fox News segment on a court case involving saying the Pledge of Allegiance in public schools, and we'll talk about the Pledge of Allegiance in church. Stay tuned. If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener supported. We rely upon you to pay for the production, salaries, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a financial gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or donate by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. That's Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
We're not funded by LCMS, Inc. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,500 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Daryl Whitty, Pastor Chad Trouton, Pastor Craig Meissner, Jeff Kalb, Pastor Jacob Sutton, Albert Graham, Steve Demlow, Diane Cates, and Bonnie Pedraza. Thanks for your support.
So should there be that sign out there in front of the church? No firearms permitted beyond this point. A no-gun zone. Maybe just one of those pictures of a handgun with the little red circle and a slash through it to tell people, you may be able to carry your guns out here, but don't bring them into church. Granted, it wouldn't stop the kind of shooting that took place down in Tennessee that we're hearing about in the news, but it's just the more general question. Should the church be a no-gun zone like so many other places are, places of business are? 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, our in-studio email address as we come to you live this Tuesday, the 29th of July, talk back at issuesetc.org. www.fathersinstructing.org. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to have a pastor's roundtable on fathers instructing their children in the faith and male leadership in the church. Be picking up some of the subjects we didn't get to in our last pastor's roundtable tomorrow on the program. Then Thursday, the Crusades will be the subject with one of our best guests when it comes to this often misunderstood period in Christian history. We should say period in Christian and Islamic history. Dr. Thomas Madden of St. Louis University. Then Friday, Dr. Alvin Schmidt will join us to talk about the influence of Christianity on Western civilization. Okay, here's another issue for you to consider. It has to do with the good old-fashioned Pledge of Allegiance. I've been in churches around the 4th of July, and a lot of them, strangely enough, after 9/11, perhaps in addition to the creed, maybe even instead of the creed, decided that it was time to put up the flag and say the Pledge of Allegiance. We'll hear about that in just a minute. This email comes from Steve in Colorado. He says, actually, historically, the church and the saloon were two places that guns were supposed to be checked before entering. When growing up, the original church building of my home congregation in Nebraska had what my dad called the gun check, and right outside the door to that, a closet with a spittoon so that men could get rid of their chew while putting up their firearms before church. Well, yeah. I don't think it's unusual to think back about 100 years, if not that, even that long, to a time, especially in rural America, where you did check your guns at the door because you carried your gun with you. It was part of your livelihood. It was part of your life. I'm not talking about the gun-toting West. I'm talking about people who, as a regular course of their day, might need to use a gun. So you checked it at the door. Should it be checked today? This email comes from VJ in San Simeon, California. Todd, guns and church are a strange mix in my book. I'm reminded of the story about an Oklahoma church that recently planned to give away a semi-automatic assault rifle as a means of attracting teens to attend their youth conference. He even provides us with a link. Unless you're a security guard in a church in a rough neighborhood, there's really no warrant for packing a gun to church. What about the rest of you? 1-877-623-MYIE or email us, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. This email comes from Paul. He says, I think that it would be a decision for the congregation if they wanted to allow guns in the building. Not similar to, but like eating, carpet color, whatever. The guns aren't actually bad. It's the person, Reed Sinner, who uses them. If you don't want bad things to happen in the building, keep the people out. That's true. Well, you know, I have been in church meetings that have been heated. Heated beyond the point of just about any other experience I've ever seen. Good old-fashioned church voters meetings. I was even at one where I think the intention was to call a pastor, and it got hot. I mean, people were mad. And that's a moment, if I reflect upon it for a second, where it probably wouldn't have been a good idea for any of the men in the group to be brandishing, the men were the ones who were getting hot, for any of the men in the group to be brandishing firearms. So where do you stand on the issue of guns in church? Obviously, we have crimes committed. We hear about them in the news, but I'm talking about law-abiding citizens carrying their guns into church. 1-877-623-MYIE, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Now, I've got a lot of problems with the Unitarian Universalists. We're talking about something that has become a non-Christian church. I think we can safely say a non-Christian church, denying the doctrine of the Trinity, that our God is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, teaching a universalist kind of salvation, which largely discounts sin. So it's no real surprise that you'd have a universalist church down in Tennessee that was known in the community for being very liberal and for being welcoming without repentance of gays and lesbians, transgendered and bisexual people. No reason to go in there and shoot the place up. There are better ways to deal with the real, clear and present danger of that kind of false teaching than with guns. Much better. The weapons that we wield are the weapons of spiritual warfare. Paul talks about them. So is there any need for us to be concerned about our safety in church? Now, I don't want to make light of the shootings in Tennessee, but consider this for a moment. There are things as deadly as shotguns in church on Sunday morning in many churches. Nobody's carrying a shotgun. No one's got a handgun in their purse or tucked into their belt. But there are things as dangerous. Now, many Christians would deny this. They would say, come on, false teaching isn't as dangerous as a loaded gun. It's more dangerous. One can kill you and take your life here and now. The other one can kill you for all eternity. I know that's not a popular thing to say in an age where we can't tell the difference between, and we don't really want to know the difference between truth and error. But false teaching kills just as surely as a shotgun. What about the Pledge of Allegiance? I grew up saying it in class, in school. Most people did. I've heard it said in church, oddly enough. I remember one service where we were required to say the Pledge of Allegiance to the American flag and the Pledge of Allegiance to the Christian flag. It was a very confusing service. Should Christians even be pledging allegiance to the flag? Is it a Christian oath? Here's a story from Fox News.
Remember those days? Did you grow up doing that? Saying the Pledge of Allegiance every day before you started your school day? Well, that is not happening for some students now. Why? Well, some claim the pledge is too religious. Others say it is a violation of their free speech rights. And one federal appeals court down in Georgia just agreed. Joining us live with more from Atlanta is Jay Sekulow from the American Center for Law and Justice. Good morning, Jay.
Hi, Megan.
All right, so this is the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. This is an important court. It's a big federal court, so our viewers know it's not a puny little decision. But what exactly did it hold?
Two things. One, the American Civil Liberties Union challenged the Florida statute which mandated that the Pledge of Allegiance be given at the beginning of the school day. There were two provisions in particular that were the kind of the focus of this, although the whole statute was challenged. One was the standing provision, and that was if you were supposed to stand when the pledge is recited. They felt that was compelled speech. The other was the ability to opt out completely of saying the Pledge of Allegiance. And there the state school board actually allows for the student to opt out of saying the pledge under a constitutional right.
But before we get to that,
right,
it gets too confusing. So the part about making the students stand. So students who have a note from their parents saying, I don't want my kid to do the pledge, were still being required to just stand when the pledge
out of respect. In other words, you weren't required to say the pledge, but just show some courtesy and stand. When the Supreme Court of the United States comes in, everybody rises. That's part of the tradition in the country.
You stand like
that
it
was
or not.
Declared, so the standing provision, as it's called, this requirement to stand, the court actually held unconstitutional, said it violates the students' free speech rights. It's another one of these chip-away cases at the pledge. They, as you said, they either go at it religiously under the One Nation Under God or here under what they call a compelled speech theory, this idea that you can't make people even acknowledge the flag is there.
I mean, Jay, it seems just from watching the ACLU's positions in these cases, they want the pledge gone.
Correct. And what they're doing is attacking it three different ways. One is the religion way. They've lost that pretty much at the Supreme Court. The second way they go after it is now these compelled standing issues. And third, they don't even like the opt-out that's allowed. They don't think it gives enough. So it's a chip-away approach to remove the pledge. You know, it used to be thought that in a free country you could tolerate something, you don't have to say it, but you can at least show respect for your fellow citizen by standing and showing some courtesy. Here, you don't have to anymore.
Do you disagree? I mean, does the 11th Circuit have a point that when you force somebody to stand, whether it's for the pledge
sure.
or the national anthem or whatever, do they have a point that that is compelled speech?
Sure. Look, I constitutionally, are they right that you can't make somebody stand up? Sure. Now let's talk about civic responsibility. I mean, to make these constitutional issues and constitutional cases shows you, I think, how far this has come. And this is where I think the ACLU is just wrong. Look, they had the right to bring the lawsuit, and they succeeded in part of it. They didn't win all of it, but they didn't get the pledge statute struck. That's very important here. Every case that the ACLU's brought to try to declare the pledge unconstitutional, whether on religion or just civic responsibility, they have lost the actual pledge itself. So now it's a chip-away approach. That's
yeah.
what they're trying.
And they say they're going to keep on fighting. They're not
yeah,
they
will.
Don't think the 11th Circuit went far enough.
No, they're going to take it to the Supreme Court, I think.
Yes,
that looks like what's going to happen.
You can count on yet another appeal and perhaps new lawsuit by them. Jay Sekulow, always love having you on. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Megan.
Okay, I don't know if the pledge is constitutional or not. I'm not a constitutional scholar. My question is, could Christians have a valid reason to object to saying the pledge themselves? That's your question. 1-877-623-MYIE or talkback at issuesetc.org. It's audio open lines.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,500 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Daryl Whitty, Pastor Chad Trouton, Pastor Craig Meissner, Jeff Kalb, Pastor Jacob Sutton, Albert Graham, Steve Demlow, Diane Cates, and Bonnie Pedraza, thanks for your support.
Will your church be one of the Issues Etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues Etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues Etc. 300, click the Sponsors section of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues Etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues Etc. 300.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
George Tiller is one of America's most notorious late-term abortionists. He has an expansive abortion facility in Wichita, Kansas. Women come from all over the nation for late-term abortions. A pro-life effort called the Abortion Collaborators has listed local companies doing business with Mr. Tiller. Since first being published, many businesses and some physicians have stopped doing business with him. The current list includes a hotel giving patients discounted stays, a bank, landscaping service, and more. Please visit today's broadcast link at lifeissues.org. Contact some of the businesses on this list and tell them to quit collaborating in the killing of innocent unborn babies. These unborn children need your help. Please visit lifeissues.org today and help save their lives.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Coming to you live this Tuesday, it's the 29th of July. It's audio open lines question I've laid on the table regarding the Pledge of Allegiance. We heard that Fox News story, the constitutionality of the Pledge of Allegiance being challenged yet again by several groups. So laying aside the issue of constitutionality, let's talk about it. As Christians, could Christians have a valid reason to object to saying the Pledge of Allegiance? 1-877-623-MYIE. By the way, Christians, some historically in the United States, have. 1-877-623-MYIE or talk back at issuesetc.org. Talk back at issuesetc.org. They were talking in that story about one of the elements of this case being whether or not kids could be compelled to stand, if not say, the Pledge of Allegiance. I had an interesting experience standing or sitting the other day. You know, in church, you stand, you sit, you stand, you sit for various reasons. And there is a reason behind the standing and the sitting and the kneeling and all of those things. If you don't understand the reason that your pastor asks you to stand, say, at the reading of the gospel, ask him. Instead of saying, I don't understand all this standing and sitting nonsense, go ask your pastor why he asks you to stand or sit during the reading of the gospel or the saying of the creed or prayers or any of those kind of things. He can tell you. Oh, if he can't tell you, buy him a plane ticket so he can go back to seminary. Or if he says, there's no real reason. Again, okay, here was my experience with standing or sitting. It wasn't the Pledge of Allegiance, and it wasn't even the singing of the national anthem. I went to a Grizzlies game. Now, just a stone's throw from where we're sitting right here in Collinsville, Illinois, there is a... Jeff, what level are the Grizzlies? You know these kind of things.
They're just an independent minor league team, so they're not affiliated.
They're not affiliated. No, unaffiliated. No. Okay. So there's this pretty nice little stadium of this independent minor league team just on the other side of the highway from where we sit. And I went there one evening with the wife and my son. And, of course, before the game, there's all sorts of ceremonies and whatnot. Well, one of them was the color guard from the local Shriners Temple. Now, Shriners are part of the Masonic Lodge. There's certain brand of the Masonic Lodge. I forget which. I think you got to be a Mason for a long time before you actually become a Shriner. And the Shriners do all sorts of great things. They run hospitals. They do marvelous things, okay? But the Masonic Lodge is an unchristian organization. We can do a show on that sometime. I got nothing against the individual men who are Shriners, but they either wittingly or unwittingly are members of an unchristian organization. So they had the Shriners color guard come out on the field before the game. And I think my son thought it was some sort of a military thing, and they asked everyone to stand while the color guard, and these were old guys, while they did around the field, which kind of took a long time. So my son stands up next to me while the Shriners are doing their color guard, and I don't stand. It's not that I don't respect the men. It's that their organization, I can't stand in honor of the Shriner color guard. I just can't do it. And my son kept on hitting me in the shoulder saying, stand up, Dad, stand up. At the time, I didn't want to take the time to explain to him why we don't stand for the Shriner, son. Plus, he would have made a big deal about it, and everyone else was standing except for me, including my wife. I said, my legs are tired. There are some things for which I will not stand. And there are some things you should stand for. It is a way of showing respect and honor. What about saying the Pledge of Allegiance? Could a Christian have a valid reason not to say it, not to want to say it, not to feel like he could in good conscience say the Pledge of Allegiance? You know, when we say that pledge, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God. A lot of people have paid attention to those under God words, wanting them either in or out. Laying aside the issue of whether or not those words belong in there, can you pledge allegiance to a flag and to a republic for which it stands when it is defined as one nation under God and you're not quite sure exactly who that God is? You know, uttering the name of God is not a small deal. It's a big deal. There have been Christians who have said, with regard to that God word in the pledge, look, if they took the words under God out of the pledge, I'd say it. But I don't want to make a false confession, given that that God could be any God anyone wants it to be. What do you think about that? 1-877-623-MYIE, talkback at issuesetc.org. It's audio open lines. Or do Christians have any business making a public a profession of allegiance to their country at all? Oh, by the way, if you want to answer my question about guns in church, should we be able to legally carry guns in church? Feel free as well. It's audio open lines, 1-877-623-MYIE. Talk back at issuesetc.org. In about 20 minutes, hour two of Issues Etc., Dr. Peter Scare will be our guest. We'll talk about Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. They're being remembered by the church today. And then we'll spend some time with Dr. Ken Sherb discussing prayer. This email comes from Joshua in St. Louis. He says, I knew an LCMS pastor who had a license to carry a concealed weapon and never was without said weapon. I assume by italicizing never, it means never. On the other hand, I also know of an LCMS pastor who had to talk down an armed man seeking sanctuary in the church, so I think a gun in church in the right hands is just fine. The problem is how to make sure it isn't in the wrong hands. Thank you, Joshua. Tom in Texas writes this, I guess I never worried about guns in church. The church I attended in Houston had a number of police officers as members. One, an undercover policeman, regularly carried his gun inside his boot as part of his uniform. He was told by the police department that to have his gun with him at all times. That's true. They are supposed to carry their firearm with them at all times, whether on duty or not. One of the churches I serve now, one gentleman has a gun rack with a rifle in his pickup. He doesn't bring it into church, although another member, a law enforcement officer, has permission to attend our Sunday afternoon services while on duty. He has his gun with him while he's there. While in high school, it was not uncommon at all for the pickup trucks in the school parking lot to have rifles in the back windows. It was a different time, I realize, but there never was a problem. It was also Texas, I assume. Where the gun rack is, it comes with the car. You have to opt out of that option if you're buying a car in Texas. This email from Daniel in the Twin Cities, he says, here's my initial thoughts on Christians saying the pledge. We take civic oaths when we take the stand or when we take public office. These are oaths of the kingdom of the left. We all hold the office of citizen, and the pledge is an oath of that citizen and merely affirms the bare basics of what being a citizen in the U.S. means. However, apart from being convicted of treason, I doubt few will actually be held responsible for breaking it. Thank you, Daniel. What about the rest of you? Talk back at issuesetc.org or 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-MYIE. Now, I know that the original president of the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod had a problem not with the Pledge of Allegiance, per se, but with a loyalty oath. Remember, this was during the days of the Great Divide in our country, North and South, in the days of the Civil War. And during those days, both sides saw fit to require of their citizens, whether it was the Union or the Confederacy, loyalty oaths. And the first president of the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod, C.F.W. Walther, at least it is reported, had a problem with taking a loyalty oath. He did eventually, I think, sign it with a long caveat scribbled on the back of the document, which apparently must have passed muster. Mark in St. Louis says, in colonial times, as Kramer argues, people didn't own guns just for hunting. Numerous laws mandated that people have guns for personal defense and defense of the community, at home, while traveling, and even in church, writes Mark. At least 6 colonies required people to have guns with them at church. Interesting. Church officials were required to check parishioners when they arrived for services to ensure that they had a gun. Clergymen were required to have guns, too. Well, that's interesting. You know, if you're a chaplain in the armed forces, you not only don't carry a gun, you can't carry a gun. You're forbidden to carry a gun. You have an aide who carries a gun for you. You're a soldier, but you're not allowed to carry a gun. That would be Clayton Kramer, by the way. Mark references Kramer, author of Armed America. When we come back, Rick Warren is weighing in on religion and politics. He's inviting both of the presidential candidates out to his church in California. We'll hear what he has to say about that and religion and politics after this.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,500 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Jeff Downs, Mr. and Mrs. Curtis Wendt, Stephen Manns, Pastor Carl Stringy, Ron Bowen, Frank Gillespie, Pastor Thomas Fulber, Jonathan Bomey, Pastor Dennis Fangmeyer, and Moe. Thanks for your support.
Issues Etc. is a team effort. Your phone calls, email, and snail mail help resurrect this worldwide outreach. Now we need your help to sustain Issues Etc. by making a gift to Lutheran Public Radio today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Help support Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio for the thinking Christian.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
You have probably read in the news about the recent buzz over federal funding for embryonic stem cell research and human cloning. Congress wants to fund research using so-called spare embryos. But would those embryos be enough? Of the spare embryos being stored, only 2.8% are intended for research. Scientists likely would need to create more and more human embryos. So where will these eggs come from? The biotechnology industry is already seeking to create human embryos by cloning for the specific purpose of harvesting their stem cells. They will not be satisfied with exploiting only embryos donated by parents. Unless Congress acts promptly to ban human cloning, biotech labs will establish human embryo farms to fuel their research. This is just bad science. Adult stem cells retrieved from ethical sources are already being used to help cure patients every day. Send the message to Congress that we want funding for ethical treatments that work, not for research that requires killing human embryos. This has been a Perspective on Life from National Right to Life at www.nrlc.org.
Ten more minutes in audio open lines. Then hour two, we'll talk about Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Dr. Peter Scare will be our guest. Dr. Ken Scher will join us to talk about prayer coming up in about 25 minutes here on Issues Etc. In the meantime, it's audio open lines, 1-877-623-MYIE, talkback at issuesetc.org. Talking about guns in church, should they be there? Apparently, there's a long history in America of carrying guns in church. I don't know that anyone would ever make it mandatory to carry a gun in church. But apparently it was not that unusual in our recent past. And saying the Pledge of Allegiance, should a Christian say it? Could a Christian have a valid reason for objecting to saying the Pledge of Allegiance? 1-877-623-MYIE. Talk back at issuesetc.org. I can't remember the last time I said the Pledge of Allegiance. I think it must have been, it was most certainly in church. And I don't know why we were required in church to say the Pledge of Allegiance. It must have been the 4th of July. Something I could never bring myself to do as a parish pastor is in the midst of speaking the Creed or the Lord's Prayer or these other sacred words, ask my people to take time out from church to pledge allegiance to their country. I figured there's plenty of time to do that Monday through Saturday, even on the 4th of July. I mean, for that matter, if we're going to have the Pledge of Allegiance in church, why not just bring in the fireworks? And as I speak the words, I realize that chances are someone listening to us actually witnessed fireworks in church this last 4th of July. Because when I say these things, intending them to be exaggerations or hyperbole or satire, I usually discover very quickly, someone's probably emailing me right now, that it's common practice in their church. Fireworks on the 4th of July. Hey, after all, if the church is going to do whatever it takes marketing, why not have fireworks every Sunday? And I don't mean the little ones. I don't mean sparklers. I don't mean, you know, the occasional Roman candle. I mean the big ones, the kind my next-door neighbor brings out on the 4th of July, the kind that shake the streets. I mean, whatever it takes, right? Here's a story from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly on evangelical leaders and their tenuous relationship, although it's getting warmer, with Senator John McCain.
Another evangelical leader may be ready to support McCain. Kim Lawton joins me now to talk about religion and politics and what sounds like a major change of heart for James Dobson. What's going on?
Well, over the past year, James Dobson has said several times that he would not and could not bring himself to vote for John McCain as a matter of conscience. Now he's indicating he might do that because he thinks Barack Obama is so bad and would be so bad for America. He says because he disagrees so strongly with Barack Obama, especially on issues like abortion, gay rights, that he feels that he may indeed have to bring himself to vote for John McCain. It's sort of interesting because it shows some of the frustration among evangelicals. They're just really not rallying around John McCain, and he's frankly not courting them that aggressively either. He's scheduling meetings with the Dalai Lama, but not with them.
But he will get a chance to court them a little bit later in the summer when he goes to Rick Warren's church. He's going to host some kind of, maybe it's a campaign event.
This will be on August 16th. It will be the first time that Barack Obama and John McCain have appeared together this campaign season. They're coming together at Rick Warren's Saddleback Church. I think it is a way that they're trying to reach out to evangelicals. Warren says he's not just going to talk about the usual issues of abortion and gay rights. He wants to talk about poverty. He wants to talk about AIDS, human rights, the environment. And again, it gets back to evangelicals fighting among themselves even about what are the most important issues that they should be voting on. So that'll be interesting. That was announced just this week that it'll happen on August 16th.
Now, one of the issues that evangelicals may be voting on could be the vice presidential selection, particularly when McCain makes his decision. How are they breaking on that right now?
Well, it's really interesting because this year it's taking on a new importance, and many evangelicals are telling me that depending on who McCain picks for the ticket would help decide whether or not they're going to be really working for his campaign and really actively trying to get him elected.
And who do they like?
They like Mike Huckabee, actually, which is interesting because they didn't support him wholeheartedly early on in the primary season, but they are supporting him. On the Democratic side, it seems like it would be a little less of a factor for Barack Obama, but one recent poll that I saw showed that there's a lot of negatives for Hillary Clinton among religious voters, as well as a lot of positives. So that's sort of up in the air.
What other poll numbers have we been seeing this past week that indicate some change in sort of faith-based voting?
Well, there are still a large number of undecided evangelicals, and that's what's driving some of the social conservatives like James Dobson a little crazy. They feel like all Barack Obama's God talk has made some real inroads. I mean, Obama's got some problems in the religious community, too. There are a large number of undecided Catholics. That's going to be a really important swing vote for him. So both of the candidates are trying to reach out.
All right, there's a story from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly. Are you still one of those undecideds? Considering yourself, at least in a broad sense, an evangelical voter who hasn't made up your mind, not thoroughly satisfied, dissatisfied with one, or not thoroughly satisfied with both? 1-877-623-MY-IE. We're coming to you live this Tuesday, the 29th of July. By the way, tomorrow is the one-month anniversary of the return of Issues Etc. to the air. One-month anniversary. Oh, you know one of the things we're going to be doing to celebrate that one-month anniversary? What do we call it? Blog post of the week? Blog of the week? Jeff? I never get it right when I say it.
It's officially blog of the week. However, we're picking our favorite blog posts, and that becomes our blog.
Right. We're not like thoroughly picking an entire blog and everything they've ever posted. We're going to find a post. I've already found mine, by the way. We're going to find a post on the blogs we read. And if you want us to read yours, you really have to let us know it's out there. We're going to pick one post, Jeff will pick one, I'll pick one, from the blogs we read, and we're going to choose that each week as the blog of the week. Now, there's a real easy way. In order to qualify, you got to go to our website, issuesetc.org. When you get there, I think you click promote, and under promote, you will find something called a widget. A widget is just a little picture that is also a link to our website. In order to qualify for blog of the week, first of all, we've got to know that your blog exists, so please email us at talkback@issuesetc.org to let us know, and also you have to display the Issues Etc. widget at your blog. And that qualifies you, both the fact that we know you exist and that you have the widget there, to be the Issues Etc. blog of the week. As I said, I already picked mine out. Picked it out this afternoon, trying to get my homework done early. Jeff is still considering many possibilities. So if you have any question, if you have a post that you want to for us to consider for blog of the week, just email it to us at talkback@issuesetc.org. Let's end today's audio open lines with a local story from Fox 2 News. And I will warn you folks, there's some blasphemy involved here, please. At least I consider it blasphemy, perhaps of a fine sort. A woman who has found Jesus, either on or in a Cheeto. I love Cheetos. I love Jesus. But I never thought of the two of them in the same mouthful.
I thought it was amazing.
I don't think it's sacrilegious.
It's a Cheeto, but to Kelly Ramey, it's something more.
I think that I found Jesus on a Cheeto, as funny as it sounds.
She bought the bag of Cheetos at this West County convenience store. Inside the bag, she felt something unusual.
I looked at that and I thought, oh my, that looks like Jesus on the cross. I mean, it was just like, wow.
She showed her family and friends, and many agree with her.
I thought it was pretty cool. It looks like Jesus to me when I first saw it.
Others saw something completely different.
I looked again and I thought maybe a horse head.
Kelly's husband has a special name for it.
He calls him Jesus.
And apparently, this isn't the only Jesus Cheeto. We checked the internet and found others. This one supposedly shows Jesus praying. The pastor of Kirkwood United Methodist Church does not see anything theologically special about the Cheeto, but thinks some good could come from it.
If people could find Jesus somehow in each of us, like she's found in this object, then that would be a wonderful thing.
Kelly was hoping the special Cheeto was a sign that her home would soon sell. Now she thinks it carries a simple message.
I think the bottom line is the joy that it's bringing. I honestly do.
She doesn't plan to sell the Cheeto and will keep it in a safe deposit box. In High Ridge, Rocky Madden, Fox 2 News.
Well, Kelly Ramey does say that she would consider putting the Cheeto on display so more people could view Jesus.
Okay, now I'm hungry. I never considered Jesus on a Cheeto. I love the comment from the pastor. You know, he doesn't think there's any special theological significance to the cheese, to the, what do they call it? Jesus? C-H-E-E-Z-U-S? Jesus? Didn't see any theological significance to it, but he thinks some good may come out of it. Kind of the way the church thinks nowadays, sad to say. I mean, it doesn't make any difference how silly, how foolhardy, how distracting, how unrelated and irrelevant to the central message of the Christian faith something is. We always are trying to wring, quote-unquote, something good out of it. I mean, it won't be long until the church is saying, come on, I mean, pornography is not that good. It's terrible, but maybe something good can come out of it. Although, I believe Cheetos are far more harmless than pornography. It's only a matter of time. I mean, if we're looking for Jesus in the Cheeto instead of where he is to be found in his word, all you're going to find is a Cheeto. We'll be right back.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Yeah.